your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Not chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make the heaven the middle of it. Rest make the heaven the middle. We are. Rest make the heaven the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We've got a good program going for this weekend. The G7 is taking place over in Cornwall, England. And there was a video put up, you can search for it on the internet, shows Joe Biden wandering around in a dining room, and it's Jill goes in there and grabs him and says, this way, you know, honey, I guess. But, I mean, he's still suffering from some kind of dementia and so forth. But starting off, we're going to start off with a really good description overall of what's going on, Greg Reese, with that now. And then we're going to follow that with an interview that Alex had with Joe Brown and Larry Pinkney. And then we'll just open it up from there. Thank you for listening. Here we go next with Greg Reese.
Dr. Reiner Fulmick is the public frontman for an international team comprised of hundreds of lawyers and medical experts who have begun legal proceedings over the CDC, the WHO, and the Davos Group for committing crimes against humanity. The protocol for the PCR test given by the WHO and the CDC was knowingly set to a level that guaranteed 100% false positives or false negatives. So there is no pandemic. This is all about getting people to take the shot. Their argument is that we are at the very least being subjected to an illegal experiment, and at the worst, global genocide. Dr. Fulmick points out how the experimental jab is in clear violation of all 10 of the Nuremberg Codes, which carry the penalty of death for those who violate them. Number one, voluntary consent is absolutely essential. There should be no intervention or any element of force, fraud, deceit, duress, or any form of constraint or coercion. By definition, a vaccine must provide immunity to the virus, protect recipients from getting the virus, reduce deaths, infections, circulation, and transmission of the virus. We are told the experimental jab does none of these, yet they fraudulently call it a vaccine. As far as duress, constraint, and coercion, it's everywhere. If you want your life back, get the shot. Number two, the experiment should be such as to yield fruitful results unprocurable by other methods. The most fruitful method would be a healthy immune system, which can be achieved through good health and natural supplements such as vitamin D, vitamin C, and zinc. But the people are not being told this. In fact, those who point it out are being vilified and silenced. Number three, the experiment should be designed and based on the results of animal experimentation. This experimental jab skipped animal testing. Number four, the experiment should be so conducted as to avoid all unnecessary physical and mental suffering and injury. According to official reports, there are already thousands of deaths and over 250,000 injuries from this experiment. Number five, no experiment should be conducted where there is an a priori reason to believe that death or disabling injury will occur. Past trials have shown a strong possibility that these new spike proteins will cause a body to attack itself. This is known as antibody-dependent enhancement, or ADE. A Nobel Prize-winning virologist says, the vaccine is creating the variants. Number 6, the risk should never exceed the benefit. COVID-19 has a 98 to 99% survival rate, less deadly than the seasonal flu. The experimental jab is already the most dangerous vaccine in VAERS 30-year history. Number 7, proper preparations should be made and adequate facilities provided to protect the experimental subject against even remote possibilities of injury, disability, or death. There were no preparations made. There are no facilities. The subject shows up for their shot and goes home. Number 8. The experiment should be conducted only by scientifically qualified persons. This experiment has been exclusively run by politicians, the media, celebrities, and big pharma bureaucrats. Number 9. The subject should be at liberty to bring the experiment to an end. Thousands of medical experts have attempted to end this madness, and their voices continue to be silenced. Number 10. The experiment must be brought to an end if resulting in injury or death. And yet, the experiment pushes on. Once again, those who violate these international laws are subject to the death penalty. Legal proceedings are moving forward and evidence is being collected. Whistleblowers are directed to contact the international team at www.securewhistleblower.com. This is likely the biggest crime ever committed against the world population. And the question is, do we still have a judicial system to exact justice? For InfoWars.com, this is Greg Reese. Big Pharma was born out of the Rockefeller oil industry in 1900 with the petrochemical. The petrochemical then dominated two major industries, plastics and drugs. Companies began synthesizing patented versions of naturally sourced drugs. The natural sources were then made illegal. Pharmaceuticals became medicine. And the sicker people got, the more their industry grew. It's a death cult, and it's up to the individual to escape. Good health begins with a healthy immune system, which needs the proper nutrients to thrive. Nutrients we cannot readily get from our food today. The combinations of vitamin C and zinc and vitamin D3 with calcium have been proven to be what we need to maintain a healthy immune system.
Appropriate now because of Greg Reese's last little information on the drug industry is a short clip by Eustace Mullins in a hotel. And it's just so overwhelmingly insightful that we're going to inject that in this week. We had it last week too, but I'm going to repeat that and I'm going to put Murder by Injection, click off on that, and we'll have all of these full interviews up as click-offs also on this site, thesecrettruth.com. But here is Eustace Mullins being interviewed in a hotel lobby, what he said about the medical industry.
It's a very powerful organization, as though nobody written a book about it. So I found a little book at the Library of Congress called The Drug Trust by a man named Morris Beale. And he was a Washington News reporter whose wife had some minor ailment. And she went to the doctors, and she was so mistreated that it made her husband furious. And so he started looking at the medical profession, and he was appalled by what he found out. So he started studying the medical profession, and he wrote a little book about 20 pages long called The Drug Trust. And on the first page of this book, he said that he had found out that every drug manufacturer in the United States was controlled by John D. Rockefeller. Well, I thought that was a very foolish statement. I couldn't believe that. And so I just decided to do a little more research and show that he kind of exaggerated. I wasn't calling him a liar, but I just didn't think he had his facts right. So as I looked into it, I found out that indeed every drug company in the United States was controlled by the Rockefellers, because it was very obvious on the list of directors of every major drug company in the United States were people from Standard Oil and from Chase Manhattan Bank and from other Rockefeller companies. So it was right there in front of me. There was no arguing about it. John D. Rockefeller.
So the man was right.
The man was right to the right. Well, he was a newspaper reporter, and so he knew what he was talking about, but I just simply could not absorb that. because I knew that John D. Rockefeller was the owner of Standard Oil of New Jersey, the greatest monopoly in the world. And in my naivete, I'm a very country boy, I'm very naive, and I thought, if this is the richest man in the world, and he has the greatest corporation in the world, what does he fool around with the medical profession for?
Yeah.
Because that wasn't a very highly paid profession in those days, but it was part of the control. And he saw new worlds to conquer, and he took over the entire medical profession in the United States. He started some of his hirelings at... He had three brothers working for him named Flexner, Abraham and Bernard and Richard Flexner. And Abraham Flexner was one of his lieutenants, and he commissioned him to make a study of the entire medical profession. And so Abraham worked on it about 8 months, and he came back with a study recommending the revamping of the entire medical profession. At that time, most Americans either went to allopathic physicians are naturopathic physicians, homeopathic physicians. Homeopathic and
naturopathic.
That was the medicine of the United States. It depended mostly on organic substances and natural substances. It worked very well. The Americans at that time were the healthiest people in the world. And they were so vigorous that you can't believe it because there were no automobiles. And most Americans did not have horse and carriage. They didn't have to walk everywhere. And so,
plus, they were hard working, too.
They were hard workers. They worked very hard. They walked 25 miles a day. And they were in very good shape. And that's what they should be doing today. So, anyway, Abraham Flexner submitted his report to Rockefeller. And he agreed with it and told him to go ahead with it. And so, at that time, Rockefeller was the most hated man in the United States. And he was trying to set up a Rockefeller Foundation. But he was so hated that Congress refused to, even with wholesale bribing, they refused to authorize the Rockefeller Foundation. So he thought it was more clever because at that time J.P. Morgan had set up U.S. Steel Corporation, which was an amalgamation of the Carnegie interests and other steel companies, and created a world steel monopoly, just like the oil monopoly. And so, you see, Carnegie was a little Scotchman who became a very wealthy man through the coal operation and the manufacture of steel. And he became one of the richest men in the world. And as he grew older, he devoted his work to his life to charity. He set up libraries all over the United States. He was a very good man. And he was a virtuous man, which Scotch people are. They're thrifty and they're very virtuous. So, because I'm Scotch myself, my mother was a muse. And from Scotland. So anyway, as a virtuous man, Carnegie wanted to give away his money. He didn't want anything to do with it, or he didn't want to manage it or dictate how it was used. And so when he set up the five Carnegie foundations, he specified that he would have no personal interest in the operation of any of them. So he had five huge foundations to indulge in philanthropy, and he himself would have nothing to do with it. And so when Rockefeller learned about these five foundations, he made a rush in and put people in charge of them, and they became Rockefeller foundations. And so
with Carnegie's money.
And so, and Carnegie thought he was being very virtuous in these millions of dollars being spent for philanthropic use, but Rockefeller had a different opinion. He thought that philanthropy should serve his business interests, and so all Rockefeller philanthropies became part of the Rockefeller business empire. He thought this was just good business. It worked out pretty well, because all the Rockefeller philanthropies helped the Rockefeller business interests.
Mm-hmm.
And so Rockefeller took over the Carnegie revamping of the medical profession, and they issued a report in 1913, the same time that they adopted the Federal Reserve Act, that that the number of doctors in the entire United States be cut by two-thirds, and they adopt a whole new system called the allopathic system of medicine from Germany.
Which is drugs.
Well, drugs.
Artificial.
Well, the allopathic German system depended on radical surgery and long hospital stays and heavy use of drugs. And so this Rockefeller thought this was terrific. And so they've been on it. They've been on allopathic system ever since. Almost overnight, neuropathy and homeopathy disappeared in the United States. In fact, they practically became illegal.
Yeah.
Because as the legislatures under Rockefeller's leadership, he set up the American League of Municipalities, which controlled all the small towns in the United States, and the American Association of State Governments, which controlled all the state governments in the United States, including the legislatures. And he used the state legislatures to draft new methods for controlling doctors and hospitals. And so all hospitals and all doctors had to be licensed through state legislature, which sounded wonderful if you didn't know what was going on. That you had to go through John D. Rockefeller to get a medical license and a hospital license.
Wow.
That's what it amounted to. And that's the system we have today. And today we've become the sickest nation in the world and the most expensive medical care in the world, except you never get well. Which seems to work out for everybody except the patients.
Works good for the doctors, though.
Good for the doctors.
It's drug companies.
Oh, yeah. So everybody's happy except the poor patients. And whenever you go to a doctor today and he prescribes a medicine for you, he says, you're going to have to take this medication for the rest of your life because it's against AMA principles to ever cure anybody. They've actually brought doctors up on charges of curing people. And they've drummed some of them out of the AMA for that very reason, because you're curing people. Because this might be the right thing to do, but from a business standpoint, it's better to keep them sick and
sure.
keep them buying the medicine, which they buy from the Rockefeller drug companies, and go to the Rockefeller hospitals, and everybody's happy.
And now they have the scam where if you can't afford it, the government's going to buy the drugs from the Rockefellers and give it to you, right?
Well, that's why they have the Medicare system, because they developed Medicare. You know, I point out in my book, Murder by Injection, that for many years, the AMA spent millions of dollars in Congress to fight Medicare, because it was called government medicine, and they didn't want, the doctors were very independent, and they didn't want the government to control their business. Well, they wound up as employees of the government, and that's what happened.
And now this new drug act, they're going to supply the drugs to the people that can't afford it with the taxpayers' money, but the drug companies will still get the money.
They get the money.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the people are buying drugs today and medications, like elderly people like myself, they couldn't afford the drugs, and so the government would pay for them.
What a racket.
Well, it shows that these people are good businessmen.
Oh, very good. Yeah. They're not very ethical, though.
Well, you and I could never think of such a diabolical plan.
Some insight into our modern medical model, isn't it? Anyway, coming up next is an interview that Alex had with Joe Brown and Larry Pinkney, and what they expressed coming from, they're both minorities, both black men, but good Americans. And what they expressed as far as freedom of speech goes, that's the number one Bill of Rights, you know, the Bill of Rights, that's number one amendment. But anyway, here's what they had to say with Alex, and they had some very important things to say. Here we go. And Larry Pinkney starts it off, followed by Joe Brown, and then Alex interjects. Here we go next.
We let people know that this is precisely what we are dealing with, and that is authoritarian takeover. I call it neoliberal fascism, because that's what it is. And as far as standing up on the floor of Congress and being held accountable, you know what? I think of what these pieces of scum did to President Donald J. Trump. Now, they could do what they definitely did to him. Imagine what they plan to have in store for us. But you know what? It's game time. And we're going to flip that script. We have to flip that script because our very lives and the essence of our republic are at stake. You remember Joseph Stalin said, show me the man and I'll show you the crime.
Mm-hmm.
All right. This is precisely what we're dealing with these neoliberal fascist so-called Democrats. All right. We need to constantly expose it. We need to constantly, you know, we have no media. We have a propaganda machine that would make Goebbels of the Third Reich, green with envy. All right? We need to face this reality, start talking with each other, working with each other, and making sure that we understand who our enemy is, why are they our enemies, what are they doing to us, everyday ordinary people. I don't give a damn about your color or your gender. Everyday ordinary people. Once the people get that, and it doesn't take long, they will rise up. The FBI said that Pinckney needs to be neutralized because of his demonstrated ability to unify black and white. They said it. I didn't say it.
I've got a copy of one of the 302s saying that.
See, this is one of the games they play. They talk about being all inclusive and therefore everybody's rights, but they do not want everybody to get together and unify because that's too powerful. They want to keep everybody separate, divide and conquer.
Override big tech censors. Click the link below and share this important report.
All right, Judge Joe Brown was with us yesterday. He's in today as well, going back to Tennessee later this afternoon. Great to have him with us. Very popular guest. Another great guest, Larry Pinckney, was a veteran of the Black Panther Party, the former Minister of the Interior of the Republic of New Africa, a former political prisoner, the only American to have successfully self-authored a civil political rights case in the United Nations under the International Covenant of Civil Political Rights. In connection with his political organizing activities in opposition to voter suppression, Pinckney was interviewed in 88 on nationally televised PBS NewsHour, formerly known as the McNeil NewsHour. He is the editorial board member of blackcommentator.com, and he got banned on Twitter for basically challenging the election. And he's always on fire exposing the attempt to divide us and control us, and I would guess he's a fan of Judge Joe Brown, so it's good to have you both here together. Larry, thanks for joining us.
Well, Brother Alex, first of all, thank you very, very much. I'm delighted and honored to be with you. You know that all the time. And to your wonderful audience. And my greetings to you, Brother Judge Joe Brown. Greetings to you. So I'll just let it go at that, and let's rock and roll.
What do you make? Because Judge Joe Brown had a lot to cover. He got really upset when I played him that FBI counterterrorism guy saying, arrest all the Trump supporters and use the CIA on Congress and let's take over. He was blown away by that. And then when he was ranting about the FBI, I thought it sounded very similar to your views.
Of course, it's very similar to my views. It's very similar to reality. And the fact is that we had better, when I say we, I'm talking about black, white, brown, red, and yellow people, citizens of this republic, we had better damn well stand up to this, what I call neoliberal fascism. These globalists, these Democrats, quote unquote, heavy quotation marks around that. These folks are all about subverting, and I repeat, subverting our republic. We must not allow this. We cannot allow this. We must reverse it.
Judge, you guys hold court here.
Well, you know, congratulations and thank you for your successes and standing up and doing the right thing, sir. I appreciate that. I'm from your era, too. I imagine I know or knew some of the same people you did. But this would make it very easy to go after you or me or any other American citizens who say, I have questions about what happened. I have questions about suppression of efforts to make fundamental changes. For the good, in my opinion. But you see, if you can go after somebody for what they say on the congressional floor, then what can you do to ordinary citizens? What would have been enabled back in the 60s when the Panther Party was at the height of its effectiveness to all of those people who simply said something that somebody disagreed with? You see, right now, they are setting a precedent where it doesn't even have to be un-American. It's just, I don't agree with that. How do you deal with that?
I agree. How do we deal with authoritarian takeover, Larry?
First of all, we expose it constantly, just as you are doing right now. We let people know that this is precisely what we are dealing with, and that is authoritarian takeover. I call it neoliberal fascism because that's what it is. And as far as standing up on the floor of Congress and being held accountable, you know what? I think of what these pieces of scum did to President Donald J. Trump. Now, if they could do what they definitely did to him, imagine what they plan to have in store for us. But you know what? It's game time. And we're going to flip that script. We have to flip that script because our very lives and the essence of our republic are at stake. So that's my response to that, Brother Alex.
I agree. So how they flip the script on us. How do we come together, flip it on them?
One of the first things we need to do is we have to understand the game that they're playing. And it's a vicious game. It's called divide, rule by division, play us off against each other. You know what? We can have our differences. As the French would say, vive la différence. But we will not come out publicly and show any weakness, any crack, any difference whatsoever. We must understand what is at stake here. The script, indeed, must be flipped again, but this time by us, we the people, black, white, brown, red, and yellow, citizens of this republic.
It's a dangerous game, Judge, because, I mean, this whole globalist Chi-Com overthrow of the country, have us all kill each other. If it doesn't work, what happens? I think they're trying it, because what do they have to lose? They never get in trouble for what they've done.
That's right. It's like, see, they don't have any sense of decency. They don't get it that nobody's supposed to be immune from these laws, but yet they want to put these things down on everybody else.
They don't get chivalry that we have these rules, not because we're wimps, but because we don't want our kids under evil.
That's right. They don't get it. See, it doesn't apply to them because they perceive themselves to be a righteous elite.
It's delusional elitism.
That's exactly what it is.
How do you counter one of these elitists that thinks they're immune, which is delusion?
Well, they really can't argue with you face-to-face or debate with you because they don't depend upon rationality, logic, and reason. They just get all the motive and it sounds good, and they're counting on the public's ignorance of the laws and the rule books, which is the Constitution. That's the rule book for the game that we play by living in this country.
Beautifully said. So Larry Pinckney, how do we cause a chain reaction? It's a good push, and you're right. I'm generally just – but how do we explain to people how much danger they're in with what the globalists and this foreign takeover is? Because Americans, I think, should unify even stronger against this. It should be so obvious that this is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. And dangerous. It's very important for us to, as patriots – I don't give a damn what our color is, as patriots, all right, of this republic. It's extremely important for us to explain to people using their own experiences on their own local level to, or levels, I should say, because it's plural, all right, to explain to them what is actually being perpetrated and perpetuated upon them. People need to not only be angry, but they need to go way beyond that to saying, you know what, we need to come up with very strong responses. We've been too timid. We've been too tepid, all right? We must be tenacious. We must help our brothers and sisters to understand on their local level. Alex, you've done this. I've seen what you've done in Austin and its suburbs. You do it on the local level, and then you link it nationally to our entire republic.
All right, gentlemen, when we come back, I want to then get into some of the subjects that the judge wants to get to, and you, Larry, I want you guys to lead us. You hit a topic, he hits a topic, because this is the big debate, and we all want to live our lives, just go to work and take care of our families, but we are under a takeover. And so the answer is, what do we do? Do we submit to that takeover, or do we say no, and how do we do it? And then the judge wants to also get into all this attack on the family and some big developments there. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back here to the Alex Jones Show. I was just talking to Judge Joe Brown about how Larry Pinckney is a famous political prisoner, and then the judge is like, oh, I know Pinckney now that we're talking to him, absolutely. Because he was even talking about the FBI setting up the Black Panthers, and how he helped bring them out to UCLA and all the rest of it. And then we're all clicking here. And then I'm talking about how they're trying to put congressmen in prison and trying to put all these hundreds of innocent people that did nothing in prison. And I forgot, oh, I'm under criminal investigation. I've got subpoenas. And I just kind of mentioned that as a footnote. Well, that's what the judge was saying. They bankrupt you with these investigations of nothing. I'm not up there like Maxine Waters saying harass people. I'm not saying burn things down. But I'm under criminal investigation. The left's celebrating that. People say, well, you better shut your mouth. Now, that makes you want to fight harder, Judge.
Yeah, see, one of the propaganda techniques is to say something often enough and people believe it, even if it's not true. And one of the extensions of that tactic is to keep saying somebody needs to be investigated, somebody needs to be prosecuted for this, that, and the other. And even though what they're talking about is perfectly legal, perfectly appropriate, those certain people that don't think out in the public start getting the subconscious and unconscious feeling that somebody's broken the law and needs to be brought to justice when they haven't. And that same thing can be turned against them. I mean, think about it. If you can go after a congressman, what about all of the rest of us?
Well, that's what you were saying during the break, is you wanted to get back on the subject, talk to Larry Pinckney about it, because it's a big deal they're doing this.
Let me get into one other thing that they're trying to do the same tactic on. All right, we've got a Secretary of Education. And the Secretary of Education, Miguel Cardona, is saying he backs transgender athletes' rights. Sounds fair enough, doesn't it? Well, let's think about some of the ramifications. You start talking about that, you have to ask the question, is it fair to make girls' sports unfair to girls to favor a few delusional boys? Is humoring the delusional more important than the healthy aspirations of real girls?
Yeah, what about their right?
Yeah, no sane and rational person or government could possibly say that the answer to these two questions is yes. Yet,
but it's like you said, you have family friends whose daughters' arms have been broken fighting men.
Wrestling, this intercollegiate wrestling. But see, here's the point. Years ago, feminists were saying it is unfair to women that men can get all of these athletic scholarships and get their college educations paid for because of their athletic prowess. Why can't the women? So now the women have that right, and then you're getting some males who get to put on bras and wear wigs, and they get to claim to be girls.
So what is the plan behind it? Because all the big corporations are behind it. I want to get your take, Judge.
What the take is this part of this program to destroy the traditional nuclear family and dismantle cisgender privilege, meaning heterosexual privilege in the family.
Exactly. Larry Pinckney, what's your view on this?
Very much with what Brother Joe said. But let me take this one step further. The ultimate plan is to destroy the republic. Let's be crystal clear about that. If you destroy the family, if you destroy the traditional / nuclear family, in essence, what you are actually doing is destroying the republic. And don't think for one moment that these misleaders out there do not know that. They know that. They know precisely what they're doing. And that's their end game, to destroy the republic. This must not be allowed.
See, there's nothing wrong with gay people doing whatever they want to do sexually. There's nothing wrong with that. That's their business. But when you start getting people talking about prosecuting congressmen for daring to question an American political procedure, when that, by the way, is number one or two on the list of typical topics throughout American politics, that's crazy.
People that criticize trying to sterilize little boys in Scotland mothers are being arrested that say, I don't think my five-year-old should have his genitals cut off.
Oh, yeah.
This is a cult.
Yeah, there's something else, too, going on here. I'm going to be running for mayor in Memphis, Shelby County, Tennessee, 2023. Now, in 2008, the Justice Department, under the Bush administration, put up the money to replace every single election machine in the county because it was declared that they were corrupt. There could be no fair election because since 2000, every so-called election was a rigged selection. Now, they finally got around under the Trump administration to threatening to sue the county commissioners if they did not spend the money. So they bought brand new machines, but those machines that they acquired have been in a warehouse, and they have continued to use the corrupt machines for the last four election cycles, including the one that this charlatan with the FBI says cannot be questioned.
And he's saying if you question, you're exactly. Larry, we can see what they're doing here. How do we counter that?
So how do they contrast this thing that machines that the Justice Department under Bush and Obama and Trump have declared to be corrupted and incapable of conducting a fair election, but yet were used for the last election cycle? How can they declare in the 14th largest city in the United States that there was a fair election, no question about it, when those very same corrupted machines that the administration, the current chief executive was part of, the Obama administration, that administration declared those machines.
So let me ask you both, first Larry and then you, Judge. How do you counter something like this then? I mean, how do we respond to this, Larry?
I respond to it, and I suggest that more of us respond to it by indicating that the system itself, as it is being perpetuated, all right, the system itself is a farce, F-A-R-C-E, a farce, all right? We're not even talking about fair or just or unfair. We should be, all right? But it's a farce. It's set up, and we need to make that clear to all of our brothers and sisters. Partaking in, I call it a Stalinist process. You remember Joseph Stalin said, show me the man and I'll show you the crime?
Mm-hmm.
All right? This is precisely what we're dealing with these neoliberal fascist so-called Democrats. All right? We need to constantly expose it. We need to constantly, you know, we have no media. We have a propaganda machine that would make Goebbels of the Third Reich green with envy. All right? We need to face this reality, start talking with each other, working with each other, and making sure that we understand who our enemy is, why are they our enemies, what are they doing to us, everyday ordinary people. I don't give a damn about your color or your gender. Everyday ordinary people. Once the people get that, and it doesn't take long, they do rise up.
I agree. We got to go to break. But, Judge, just in general, what are solutions? Just not going along, speaking up? What do we do?
We speak out. The American people has to form a massive consensus that irrespective of the political party that you belong to, irrespective of the particular slant you may or may not take on something, this is intolerable. No one is supposed to be in a position to threaten us and our representatives for speaking out and questioning what's going on.
Next, we have a clip of Kaha Lanahi, a professor, a psychiatrist, talking about a fantasy that she had, about shooting a white person. And then we have a response from Carol Swain on that on a Fox News Network interview. So here we go with that clip.
This morning, more fallout for the New York City psychiatrist who told an audience at Yale about her fantasy to shoot white people.
I had fantasies of unloading a revolver into the head of any white person that got in my way, burying their body, and wiping my bloody hands as I walked away relatively guiltless. With a bounce on my step, like I did the world a favor. White people are out of their minds and they have been for a long time.
She later said that she got a bounce in her step. Here to react, former professor, Dr. Carol Swain. Professor, this is not an isolated incident. This is on college campuses everywhere, right?
Yes, there is a dangerous double standard that allows racial and ethnic minorities to engage in hate speech without any consequences. And this has been going on for years. And what I've always noticed is that the universities seem to reward the ones who make the most outrageous, the most hate-filled statements. It's been that case ever since I've been in academia. White people seem to like to be entertained by minorities like this. And I mean, not all white people, but the ones on university campuses that make the big decisions.
Carol, I gotta tell you this. She later tweeted this right here. She says, laugh out loud. Looks like everyone is in a tizzy about fantasy dreams, but not actions. You know, the problem with this is the country is deeply divided. And part of the reason the country is deeply divided is because of academia. They're putting fuel in this fire.
Yes, and the problem is that this woman, she should be reported to the New York State Board of Health or the Connecticut Board of Health or wherever she's from, I believe New York, and also the professional boards. I mean, she should not be practicing medicine. What she says matters, and so there are lunatics that may be listening to her speech right now that will go out and act on her fantasy. She has planted that in someone's mind.
I'm so glad that you brought up the board. We didn't get a statement from them, but we did get one from the School of Medicine at Yale. This is what they said. Quote, to emphasize that the ideas expressed by the speakers conflict with the core values of Yale School of Medicine, we added the disclaimer, this video contains profanity and imagery of violence. Yale School of Medicine expects the members of our community to speak respectfully to one another and does not condone imagery of violence or racism against any group. Doctor, the last thing I would say on this is, why do we continue to fund these higher education institutions? I mean, I know you value education, but until we start speaking with our money, they're going to continue to do stuff like this and the indoctrination that's on the campuses.
Yes, and that statement should have ended the career of that doctor because she is unfit to practice medicine. And we also should be concerned that even Harvard University educated physicians are talking about using racial preferences in the treatment of patients suffering from heart attacks. They're going to give preferences on the basis of race. This is ridiculous. It's unprofessional. It's un-American. It's probably illegal. If not, it should be.
She didn't just fantasize about doing this act. She felt comfortable telling people about it. Doctor?
Planting it in their minds. She's a psychiatrist. She knows what she's doing.
That's exactly right. Thanks, doctor.
We've got Sam Cooper coming up next, and he's written a book about this drug connection the CCP has with these casinos, Macau and Vancouver and so forth, Toronto. But anyway, he's viewed the interview is very interesting because he proved up the connection the CCP, Communist Party, Communist Party of China, with laundering and possibly connected with some of these drug cartels and so forth. And with the fentanyl. So here we go with that interview.
So, Sam, you've written Willful Blindness. You know, I'm unaware of another book like this. I certainly haven't read one. You take us on a journey, basically like your own journey of almost 20 years of investigative reporting through, I don't know, the dark underbelly of how corruption and drugs and, frankly, sex trafficking and the Chinese Communist Party intersect and, frankly, grow and metastasize in Canada with impacts not just on Canada, Vancouver and Canada, but also on the world. I mean, this is an unbelievable, unbelievable piece. I just want to let the audience know this is my experience of reading the book. Does organized crime and the Chinese Communist Party intersect. Give me the rundown.
Well, the rundown is really, you're right. It's actually about 10 years of my personal reporting in discovering this convergence of the party run out of Beijing, the Communist Party, and how it co-opts and uses really any tool at its disposal. I knew for years that sort of high-level Western intelligence reports alleged there was this unbelievable connection between state actors in China from the party, some of the most powerful people in the world, and how they interrelate with crime bosses. You know, especially for people born in a country such as Canada, it's hard to believe. This is intelligence reporting that a bit of it gets leaked in Canada, and still many people can't believe it. But my journey of discovery was really getting into the story through strange real estate happenings in Vancouver, and eventually I discovered that this underground banking model that people are aware of, Macau casinos, people are aware that the Chinese Communist Party is very active in Hong Kong. People know of those indications where the party uses thugs to intimidate democracy protesters in Hong Kong. But I was finding that this was happening in Canada. And really, the journey of discovery is Canada, especially the city of Vancouver, has become a global node of the party's efforts to infiltrate democratic societies through purchases of real estate, through efforts to get into technology companies in Western nations, through the usage of tycoons, industrialists that travel the world playing baccarat. And while they're playing baccarat, they're not just entertaining themselves. They are exporting capital. But there's also another layer to it. There are more nefarious activities, I found, which could involve, to use an intelligence term, threat financing. This could mean that money transacted in casinos, it looks like a so-called loan shark giving a high roller money to use in a casino in Vancouver, but it also could include a drug transaction. It could include providing money to someone. They may have some political influence operations or some money to spread around in politics in Canada. So there's just so many different lines of, you could say, attack being used by the party in very sophisticated methods that I found often run through casinos. And to a shocking extent in Vancouver, I have to say that for Canadians, it's unbelievable to think that a hockey bag with up to $1 million cash can be walked into a casino to buy chips. It looks, smells, and it's a drug trafficking transaction. Yet this is happening in Canada, not always in broad daylight, sometimes around midnight in the casinos, but it was happening. And I just found so much more was happening, flowing out of those transactions.
Well, so let's talk about the casinos just for a second, because there's multiple things happening with these giant hockey bags of rolls of 20s that you were describing. And they're so big because they're small bills, but people cash out and then they get big bills. And this is, I mean, frankly, an incredible money laundering operation, isn't it?
It's incredible. And to break that down, look, drug trafficking organizations around the world have a problem. It's not really a problem for them to make money. It's a problem to move money. So when they sell fentanyl or cocaine, methamphetamines, ecstasy on the street, they get $20 bills. They're often soiled. We know that they cause deaths in cities like Vancouver from fentanyl heroin overdoses, but they create a huge volume, literally warehouses of $20 bills. And they're useless for the drug trafficking organizations unless they can get the volume down. How do they do that? One of the simplest ways and the most apparent ways in Vancouver casinos is the drug trafficking organizations hire loan sharks, or runners as they're called, to go into the casino. They identify high-rolling gamblers, and they provide these $20 bills, $10,000 bundles wrapped in elastic bands in the manner of street drug trafficking. The VIP gamblers go to the casino cash cage. They get their chips, which have values of up to $5,000. they gamble and they can receive, if they win, if they're lucky, they can get a casino check. The money laundering can flow from that. You can see how quickly you can get a down payment if you have a check for $500,000 to buy a home. Or simply the $20 are exchanged for clean $100 bills wrapped to Canadian banking standards. And that is just the most simple and apparent way that these volumes of $20 bills are reduced to bankable $100. And again, sophisticated transactions flow from that. But my book, my reporting discovery, was showing that simple direct money laundering method of getting those $20, turning them into hundreds, and banking them.
Before we continue, I'd like to remind everyone to subscribe to our new video platform, Epoch TV. So Epoch TV has a host of new and exclusive programming, and it's totally, totally free of censorship. You can subscribe at epochtv.com/ATL. epochtv.com/ATL. You can also subscribe at the link below. You know, you call this, or this is part of what you call the Vancouver model. I'm going to get you to explain that to me a little later. And in fact, you extrapolate later on and you say, well, in fact, you know, based on what I've seen and happening north of Toronto, this is actually the Canada model, right? Which is frankly chills me to the bone because, as you said earlier, we don't tend to think of ourselves, you know, Canadians, we don't tend to think of ourselves as, you know, being amidst, you know, hotbeds of this kind of activity.
That's absolutely right. And we can go farther. It's actually the Macau model of money laundering. And this is how it works. It's been happening for decades in Macau. The Hong Kong tycoon owned those casinos. They essentially had monopolies for many years. We know China is an immensely rich country now. Of course, it's a communist country. The people have a limit of $50,000 they can export per year. So how do those people that are very connected on the high side in the Chinese Communist Party, very wealthy narcos, maybe even some legitimate industrialists, still want to get their money out of China? They go to a Macau casino and they make a deal with triads. I'm going to put a credit down in a Chinese bank. I'll arrive in Macau. I'll have a good time. You'll pay me out that cash. I can gamble. Now I can get a check out of the casino. I can now my money can go abroad. That model was simply transplanted to Vancouver and, of course, Toronto. Underground banking allowed those same transactions. I talk about a man, a very prolific loan shark, a Richmond organized crime figure, would travel to Macau, he would travel to China, he would travel to Hong Kong, and he would recruit these ultra-wealthy baccarat gamblers and say, there's another market in town. Fly into Richmond, B.C., put your credit down in a Chinese bank, and I'll pay you out in cash. There's no problem. You can buy the casino chips. We have good deals. Not only that, I have underground casinos in my Richmond mansions you can gamble in. Come to Canada. That's the Vancouver model. It's happening in Markham, Ontario, North Toronto. It's the Canada model, and it all really grew out of that Macau, Hong Kong, Chinese Communist Party, and narco trafficker nexus that's been running for years.
Hey, thanks for watching American Thought Leaders.
Next, we got Laura Ingram talking about generational programming of our children in these schools and this climate and so forth, and what one parent had an interaction with her daughter. Here we go next with that.
I have a 9-year-old daughter. I have 3 kids. And I told my 9-year-old daughter that I was going to be speaking with you. And I said, what do you think about the climate change? And she said, the earth is on fire and we're all going to die soon. And I asked her how that made her feel. And she said it made her feel angry.
Now, you'd think that Congresswoman Katie Porter would want to calm, not stoke her daughter's fears, but you'd be wrong. Now, if Democrats on the left are willing to project their own freaky phobias and radicalism on their own kids, imagine what they're going to do to your kids. They're just condemning the next generation and beyond to becoming woke. Like, little Susie will say, my pronouns are he, she, him, her. I'm non-binary, but considering trinary. And by the way, if you don't affirm her insanity, you're just going to be canceled as a person. The kids are going to become paranoid. They'll actually believe the world is going to end in about 10 years.
What I'm here to say is that, unlike you, my generation will not give up without a fight. And to be honest, I don't believe for a second that you will actually do this.
They're going to be terrified. They'll be easier to control, though, since they're going to live in this constant state of fear about everything, from a MAGA hat guy to, I don't know, a police officer in a uniform. The kids will be hypochondriacs. They're going to treat Dr. Anthony Fauci as the last word on all things health and happiness related. Mommy, I have the sniffles. Mommy, what about the variants?
Should Americans be ready for a new surge in cases in the next couple of months, Dr. Fauci?
Well, I think you always want to be prepared for that type of thing. There may be variants that are circulating.
Well, the kids are going to be disrespectful because they're going to hate the country. And in a way, I think they're going to hate you for having all your old bourgeois values. Meanwhile, they'll be taught to worship Marxist agitators as courageous climate revolutionaries. It doesn't have to be this way. That was manure, by the way. That was their protest. Parents need to step up and start teaching kids actual history, real science, and real critical thinking skills. We can do our part to stop all this madness. You don't want your kids collecting manure and throwing it in the street, do you? Of course, when it comes to being woke or anti-racist, Democrats are the planet's biggest hypocrites, though. Case in point. Every single Senate Dem just voted against cutting off taxpayer funding to colleges that discriminate against Asian Americans. So when it comes to real racial discrimination, Democrats aren't just absent, they actively defend it.
Well, that's it for this week. My gosh, I mean, we've got this gender thing. We've got men running against girls and beating them in 100 meter dashes and then getting up and taking trophies. What's this madness? We've got this country turned upside down. Critical race theory. Thank goodness some of the states are outlawing it. We need to outlaw all this crazy stuff. We've got how far and why did it get going this far? I mean, my gosh, but parents are coming back. And, there was a clip that Kudlow had about there's blowback on this. Parents are getting mad as hell, and they're coming out of woodwork now, and they're going down to these meetings, the school board meetings, and they're voicing their opinions very forcefully at times and very passionate, because those are their kids getting programmed, and their kids were coming home and saying to their mom, "We're gonna all die, you know, in 10 years or whatever." And you got that little gal in Sweden, and she's saying, "Oh, we got to fight this, you know," and all that. They've got them so programmed. But Donald Gibson, Dr. Donald Gibson out of New York college system up there, SUNY, wrote a fine book on environmentalism being a political tool. And that's what it is. But they've been indoctrinated for decades after decades after decades. And they really think that we're going to all die in about 10 years because of environmental issues. So anyway, thank you for listening, and God bless each and every one of you. Good night.